Accession number 18259, Reel 11.
Reel 11.
And we used to, say it's our job to unload this, and they had this big shed for the cement, and we used to we'd invariably be walking along and then accidentally to fall off our shoulders and burst on the ground, you know. We used to have strokes like that as much as we dare do to interrupt the things, you know. And then these, I say, when these trucks came in with the gravel and the sand, we used to have to throw it off onto the piles near hand, you see. Well, we'd get up there, and it'd be maybe three or four of us on a truck, and we'd just literally play about if we weren't being observed. Usually do as least as we dare, you know, at least as we possibly could as regarding work. And anyhow, if you said get told off, the old foreman used to play up with us, and then we'd just maybe do a little shovelful out every 10 minutes or something like that. It used to take us days to unload these trucks of sand and cement. And anyway, it got to the stage in the end where they said, if you get them done, you can go early. So that's what they used to do in the end, to try and get the work done, you know.
Did that work?
Yes, it worked. You sort of bring them in and say, right, if you do all of these, well, there must be a row of trucks, get these done today, and then you can knock off a bit earlier, you see, but we used to work like hell then. You get it off so we could get back to the billet, you see. And there was not much to do in the billet, but at least you could go in and get your head down or something like that. And as I said, there was all kinds of people working on this site, all nationalities. And there was one party in particular. We came in a compound, and I don't know how, but I also said they were Mongolian Russians. Now, it seemed to me as if they were all workers, they'd been sort of conscripted for work for the German, the German cause. And there was these, and although I saw them later on, some of them working for the Germans, actually. There was a little slanty eyed, like a Mongolian type of person. And they were in a poor state. They were really in a poor state. Most of these Russian prisoners were, but look. And they were really starving. And there was one. this is going off any action, of course, in the war action, but there was a little chap who used to come into this hut, one of these little Mongolian fellows, we'd call them, when we were having our breakfast, and they used to come in begging for a bit of food, you know. And I still see this man now, this little man, he used to come in. And they're dressed in a sort of, they all had awful uniforms, you know. They were in really poor condition, a lot of them. And they had little hats, about round type of hats on the head. And I remember this chap, he came in, and he put his hat on the ground, and he started doing some sort of a singing, and a dancing, and going like, as if he was playing a banjo of some description, you know, to entertain. And he was, whether he'd been a busker in his native country, I don't know, but they were doing that type of thing, you know. And it was begging. We didn't have a lot, but we gave him a little, you know, bit of food, a bit of bread, something. And there was one particular day when we seemed to be getting Red Cross parcels pretty regularly for a spell, because we were in this camp for some time. And the Canadians used to send bulk food, bulk part, which, and you come in, you send cheese and butter and stuff like in bulk, you see, sugar in cartons and boxes and whatever. And we got this cheese, well, they used to divide it up amongst so many, you see. And consequently, we had to finish. We finished up with a fair big piece of cheese between four or five of you, you see. And we said, we'll take some with us to the hut for this little fella. And he came in, through the four, he came doing his little sing, bit of a sing and dance. And we gave him a bit of this cheese. And he goes through the motions as if it was soap, rubbing his hands and his face to us, indicates enough to say, well, what is it? Mm. And of course, we went through the motions. Well, it's mangiare, food. He had a piece of cheese. I don't know, it must have been about £2 on this block of cheese, and he started eating it. You could imagine what anybody, you start to eat cheese like that, of that amount, like he was trying to, and he just about started coming out of his ears with the, and it was sick. Oh, we thought we'd done him a real injury, you know. But he had no idea what it was, and you know, you could just imagine yourself, he trying to eat a lot of cheese like that, and poor little fella. And they said there were lots of them about in this camp, and they used to scavenge for anything. You know, so they used to walk around this compound. They're supposed to be working like we were, but we all used to loaf about. They used to come out scrounging about for the least little bits of food they could find. Ourselves, we used to go and get hidden in the main place where it was nice and warm. We used to climb up between some boiler pipes and things and look down on this little foreman looking for us. And I'd say we were there quite some time. And it was whilst we were there, I met this chappy, who was a South African. Because quite a lot of South Africans capped at the same time, wasn't there? Quite a lot of camps. And he was in civilian life. He'd been something to do with the theatre. He was a producer, a playwright, or something or other. And for our own entertainment, we put shows on, you see. And he took charge of this thing, and he wanted volunteers to take part in this thing. And we had a hole, a hut set aside, pretty large hut for it, and we put a sort of a stage up at one end. And we had this play, and it was Sweeney Todd, the Demon Barber of Fleet Street, you know. And I played the part of Sweeney Todd. And it was really funny. You saw him howling with laughter. Put as much fun into it as you could, you know, to relieve the monotony, you know. Had a great big wooden razor thing about this long, and began blathering them up with soap, you know. And up used to go the chair, and then used to black out then. Then the next scene, we were supposed to be down in the basement where this Mrs., whatever her name, I just forget her name now, the woman who had the pie shop next door to Sweeney Todd's shop, used to collect the bodies for making the, putting the meat into the pies. There's another one we did, The Crooked Billet, that was it. There was one called The Crooked Billet. And I was in that, I was supposed to be a tough guy in that. But all these things were really, you know, you had to do things like that to sort of relieve the monotony of the, really. But and that's why we used to get up. We used to get up some pranks when we're out working, really. And then whilst we were there, I had a set of boxing gloves, which I used to keep with me, and we used to do a bit of sparring boxing. You see, every night, every evening, we'd be doing the place where we used to do this our sparring boxing. And we had a chap came in, a prisoner of war from Tunis that time. And he was a Grenadier Guardsman. And he had been in the they'd just had, they'd come out the line after they'd been in the line for a bit, and they'd come out, and then of course once you come out the line in the guard, you start doing your you know, back to drills and get yourself smart, and no chance of lagging. And they'd had their boxing championships as well. You said you used to have all of those regular, you used to have them in battalions. Always used to said if you can't box, you're no good. You have to fight. And anyhow, this chappie came in, and he'd fought in the brigade championships. That was it. This Grenadier, he was a sergeant. I can't remember his name. He came from Lancashire somewhere, Bolton. I don't know if it wasn't Bolton, I think. And anyhow, we got our heads together. He saw us perform about one night. He said, "Oh, so he joined in." He said, "So it's it on a high day." He says, "Well, what we'll do, we'll try and get a boxing tournament going, you see." And we got in touch with some of these German guards. You could speak to them, you know, quite decent. There's one or two of them were nasty. But anyhow, we put our proposal to them, right, that we're going to. It was coming up for a holiday, just on the public holidays. And we said we'd wanted to do this, put this show on. Could we have the facilities to build a boxing ring? And anyhow, they agreed to it, and we had all the materials delivered for us, and we all got our hands in and built this boxing ring. It wasn't a real big thing, like, but it was big enough. We got the ropes round the corners, and we put this boxing match on. The only thing about it was, you were dead wood. You know, it was just like dead leg. There was no spring or anything like that. And you went long before you. Your old legs were giving out. And I wrote a bill out. A grand boxing show, you know, something after that style. And I put on it, what was it, a 6-round contest between Sergeant so-and-so of the Grenadier Guards and Guardsman Gallantry of the Coldstream Guards. We had all this written out on a big sheet of paper, you know. And then we had other bouts underneath, other bouts, you see, we've got others to volunteer to go in. And there was one of them, there was another big chap in there, he was a Grenadier Guardsman, and he was a chap away, he couldn't dare to fly. In fact, I don't think he knew how to go to defend himself at all. He was a bit very really nice fella. And we also had some of the smallest men. There was a little lad in there from the East Yorks, from the East Yorks. Oh, he can't have been more than, I don't know, 5 feet, I don't think. So we'll put a novelty contest test on between these two, you see. And that came at the end of this year, particular afternoon. We had them in the ring together, and it was funny. And this little fella, he chased this big fella on the ring, and he was having to jump up to it. It was really funny. It was, yeah, real good fun, good entertainment for me. We used to supplement our rations. We used to have a little bit extra bread for working, actually. We didn't get anything. We got our soup, you know, a normal pint of soup or something like that, very thin stuff. And we got a bit of extra bread. And we used to go out and do a little bit of bartering. We'd get in Red Cross bars. We used to get a bar of soap, you know, parsley, see, which was something that they'd never... Well, I say they never knew about that. I'd love to get hold of it. And what else was it? Something else used to like. But anyhow, we used to, if we could get a real big, nice, big loaf, you know, loaf of bread. We used to, this is whilst we were working round, you know, because you used to come in contact with all these different nationalities, you see. Some dare speak to you,
Some was this the civilians?
Oh, the civilians, yes. Sorry, yeah, the civilian people. And some just wouldn't speak to you. If you offered to speak to some of them, they were terrified to death. No, no, no. But there were others who were just the opposite, you see. And there were, anyhow, we used to find a few who really would play ball and then got some extra bread. In fact, some of the workers from the, when you say civilians, as opposed to the civilian prisoners, there were a lot of civilian prisoners, you see, of all these different nationalities, and we'd maybe get a loaf of bread for a bar of soap or something like that, and then the problem used to be then smuggling it back into the camp, you know. we used to some tricks. When we used to go out to work, we used to take our great coats with us, and I hit on the idea of trying to get a loaf in. There was something like, there were a longish type of loaf, something like we now call, a Danish loaf. They're like a long sort of loaf. And what I used to do, I'd wore a belt, and I had a piece of wire, and I used to stick it through the loaf and then fasten it onto the back of my belt. And I walk up to the camp as we were going back in, and we used to come along here, and some of them were very casual with the, you know, searching, just a matter of routine, just would come along. And I used to just put my hand behind my back and shove me this loaf up with my greatcoat, you see, so as they could feel around here. And then you used to feel around this time. All right, off you go. And you get through with a loaf of bread hanging from your hanging from your belt, you know. And a lot of you used to bring eggs in, you know. You used to come on with an egg in each hand, you know, and things like that. It was really, it was a matter of wits against the wits. Use your wits to survive, that was the thing. Survival was the name of the game, really. There was only one guard in there who was really nasty. The others were quite decent, and he was a nasty piece of work. He used to come in the hut in the morning, and roast out of bed, you know, and by golly, if he didn't shift that second, he used to have you out, and didn't have, he used to give you a bit of rifle butt, you know. he was a really nasty piece, was that fast. But by and large, they weren't too bad. From there, I remember travelling again, same order, in the trucks with the straw on the floor and urine tank in the corner, and where we were going, we'd no idea. We just marched to a siding and boomed into the air trucks, and we finished up. I don't know, I mentioned that name earlier, Lambsdorff. Now, I don't know whether that camp I've just mentioned was called Lambsdorff Camp, or whether it was a place we went to after that. We left this camp, we went by rail, and we got to this spot, and I've never seen so much devastation. Railway sidings. It looked as if it was a big marshalling yard, and it had been bombed, you know, by our, I think the Americans in more of the daylight bombing at that time. And it had been bombed, and what a mess, absolutely. It's hard to describe it. There was tangles of track going up feet into the air. Engines over here and trucks. It was absolute shambles, was this place. And you see, there was I don't know how many tracks, but no end of tracks, all going in. It looked to me like as if it had been a marshalling yard for a few of the rail traffic, and it had been bombed, and by golly, hadn't it been bombed. And we were put in a billet there. It was sort of a type of a school, remember rightly. not very far from the railway. And we were set to work, and we were unloading these wagons, whatever the container, all those boxes, bags and sacks, I don't know, food stuffs and all kinds of things in there. And there were everybody there, of course. There was always no end of people working on it, just like swarms of ants, you see. And in fact, there was women, Ukraine women, working on there also. In fact, they were on this last camp I mentioned that they were in there. There were women working on there. And I can always remember, seeing, you used to get a row of women at either side of a length of track with the, the sleepers. And there were one, two, three, whatever, hop, with this length of track, and to move it somewhere, you know. Women went nuts. And I say we were there quite a while. Doing work in this, and I didn't mention earlier that I suffered with hemorrhoids badly. This something that came on once I was in the desert, and I was got to be really bad with these things. And we were in this spot, and we had some air raids. With our own Allied bombers, I thought, good Lord above that. I mean, we've come this far again, and we're going to get seen off by our own. And of course, everybody was so scarper as far as they could away from this. And, it used to come over, I think there were, these American fortresses, not the super fortresses, they came in the war later on, but these fortresses. But I used to throw some stuff down, and they were escorted with used to come strafing these twin fuselage what's the name of them?
Anyway, Mustangs?
No, there were twin fuselage
Mustangs?
No, there wasn't a Mustang. I think Mustang was a... They were a fighter, weren't they? Fighter bomber was Mustang, weren't they? I think of the name. I read it.
Doesn't matter anyway.
No, it doesn't matter really. They used to come over strafing, you know. And this happened on two or three occasions. In fact, we did hear stories that one or two of our men had, you know, prisoners had been killed. I couldn't really confirm it from where we did hear that. And... I used to think, well, God, Lord, what next? When are we going to get out of this lot? So I kept going to sick. There was an MO in the place, right? And I don't know, I think there was a German and a British medical officer prisoner, you know. And I played on this, I thought, well, I was bad enough as it was, really. It wasn't a question of playing on it, really. I thought, well, I'm going to try. It's a means of me trying to get away from here, if I possibly can, you know, because, it was getting shocking. So I went sick, and then they called me one day, and off I went. I was put into a truck with some other men, and off we went. No idea where I was going, but we knew we were going to some hospital for some treatment. And that's where I met this laddie, who I'll mention, you know. The laddie was maybe about 2 or 3 years younger than me. He was a signaller, and he'd been captured in the desert. He came from Leicester, if I remember rightly, in the Corps of Sigs. And we teamed up together. And there was an Australian with us. I remember Australian, he was a really funny fella. And we went in this truck, and we went for miles and miles, and we finished up at Katowice. That's near a Polish border, I remember rightly. Into a military hospital there. And we were put into an annex, this hospital. I'm just trying to think now what date. No, that day. That would be coming up to 42, 43. Because when we left there, it was snowing, heavens, winter really set in.
Must have been the winter of 44, 45, by the sound of it.
Would that be it then? Anyway, whatever. And I was there, I was waiting for an operation, similar operation, and I don't know what the other lads were there for. Anyhow, we hadn't been there more than a few days, and that was when the Russians decided, pushed against Hungary, was it Hungary and Czechoslovakia, coming from the east. And we had to evacuate this hospital.
Did you get proper treatment there?
Went bad, yes, went bad treatment. But if it had been any... We'd left to the people who were moving, we had to move, it was all military, wounded, you know. And we had to evacuate this hospital, take them into ambulances, you know. Oh, and there were some terrifying scenes, terrifying. They had appeared, they had limbless altogether, limbs, arms missing and legs missing and nothing. They were in a shocking state, all from this, you know, the Russian front people, I think.
These were German casualties.
They were German casualties, yes. And they didn't go on us much at all. They didn't have to give us some, you know, but of course we couldn't do much about it. They told us everything they could. And we, and as I say, we...
You mean you got abuse?
Abuse. And then we were taken, you know, we'd laid, put them in the ambulances, you know, until it was all clear. And then it was time for us to evacuate. And it would be, I think, about November time. I know it went, oh, it's awful weather. It was snow, heaven's eye. And we had to evacuate and we set off marching. We didn't, know where we were going. No one told us, we just had to march and march. And we had this. There was a little party of us again who'd been into this, you know, into this annex for minor operations. I don't know what exactly. But I never got mine done. You see, I never got my hemorrhoids seen to. And we set off then on the march. And we each had a every couple of us we had a little truck. A little something to pull along with your little bits and pieces on, you know, with, you know, one or two spare blankets we'd picked up maybe, and a box with a bit of food in and things, and our little belongings, like a little sled, you know, and we're pulling these along behind us. And we marched, and we marched, and we marched. And how many miles we used to do, I don't know. But we'd march for maybe about 3 days, and then about every fourth day we'd have a full day's rest. And we'd pull into whatever place there was, mainly farm buildings, you know, farmyards, and put into barns to sleep, you know, put in amongst the straws and that. And they'd give us some food, they'd knock some food up for us, because they used to.